League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Goldbridge Saves Football Podcast. I'm Mark Goldbridge.
And I'm Will Brazier. Let's talk about Birmingham City.
I'm not really Will Brazier. He is on holiday in LA, which is where everybody seems to be at the moment. But there's loads to get into on the podcast today. Exciting news. We've got the Fantasy Premier League code for you so you can enter our league. We'll have a look at that later in the video. But three big topics I want to get into. First of all, the lack of transfers in the transfer window in the Premier League so far, but what should every team be doing? We'll look at everybody from Liverpool to Ipswich. Well, we might not look at Ipswich, to be honest, but we'll definitely look at the big six because that helps with views. We'll also be looking at something that I think is really interesting. I did a video on That's Football this weekend. In fact, I did two. Very controversial. One of them was talking about Arsenal winning the league. But I didn't say they were going to win the league. I said that they sort of will win the league at some point in the future, in the next 100 years, maybe. But I think there is a more sinister side to why teams can't win the Premier League. And we're going to delve into that because that's what we're here to do on Goldbridge Saves Football. I'll also be talking about the fallout from something I said at the end of last week about how it's inevitable that games will be played outside of the UK for the Premier League. And I say UK because sometimes Welsh teams play in the Premier League and that is outside of England. It's in Wales. So therefore, I say UK. But what I'm talking about here is competitive Premier League games being played in the States or in Australia or India. I think it will happen. Some people get very, very agitated about this. So let's start the debate about that as well. But to start the show, we're going to be talking about the Premier League. It isn't long to go now. We can stop pretending that we like international football. You'll really see how people like international football when we have three brilliant weeks of the Premier League and then there's an international break coming every month before Christmas. Yes, the real love for international football will show its true colours then. It's crap. We don't like it. But we love the Premier League. It's coming back. Can't wait to do the section on the Fantasy Premier League. We'll give you the code. Get involved. You won't beat me. I'm taking it serious this year. But can anybody beat Manchester City in the Premier League this season? Well, I'm going to dive into this. I think that to win the Premier League and to beat Manchester City, you've got to have the squad to do it. And I don't think anybody can. And I think it's never really been discussed before because people can't be bothered with modern journalism. We can. We last season were talking about VAR and we won't stop. We also spoke about the 3 p.m. blackout. We won't stop. And we also won't stop talking about things that matter. Manchester City have won six of the last seven Premier League titles. At Christmas last year, you'd be forgiven for thinking things might be about to change. On their day, Arsenal can beat Man City. On their day, Liverpool can beat Man City. But there's a lot of days in the Premier League. I can't even remember how many there are, but there's 38 games. And to do that, it's not about being the better team on the day. It's about being the better team across 9 months. And Man City are head and shoulders above everybody else. So when we start another Premier League season and people want to say, this could be the year of the Arsenal, this could be the year of the Liverpool, it will be the year of the Man City because they have something that others don't have. And I'm not talking about 115 things. I'm talking about their squad. Across that Manchester City squad, they have 18, 19, 20 players that would probably start for most teams, including Arsenal. It's an untold wealth of proper high-end talent that Pep Guardiola can look across a nine-month season and say, in October, I'm probably not going to use Vardy as much because I want him to be ready for March. I can rotate and use Stones there, or I can use Aki there. And then in March, I'll give Aki a bit of a break. And it's all about being able to do that because he's got the squad to do it. Whereas if you're Declan Rice at Arsenal and Arteta, you're not going to go, I won't use Declan Rice much in October and November because, you know, it's only the Premier League we're trying to win and the Champions League we're trying to get through. Because I want to keep him sharp for March. Arsenal have to use Odegaard and Rice and other big players like Saliba week in, week out. Whereas Pep Guardiola's Pep Guardiola's squad is so big, he can do something other clubs can't do. So how do you do that? Because Arsenal fans would say, well, let's just build a squad like Man City. And this is where I think for me, the modern media get it wrong, because they don't assess the situation in the correct way. The information is there. It is an impossibility for Arsenal to build a squad like Manchester City, because that squad costs money. Not only do you have to keep that squad happy across a season when they're not playing as much, but you also have to pay them to be at that football club, to be part of that squad. Manchester City, according to an article in Sport Bible in, I think it was March, pay in wages £3.7 million per week in wages. Arsenal pay around three. That's £700,000 a week difference in wages that Man City are playing. £700,000 a week would get you three £200,000 a week payers for Arsenal. That's the difference. Across a whole year, Manchester City are paying about £200 million a year in wages. Arsenal are paying 166. That's £35 million a year in wages difference between Man City. But it's more relevant when you look at what's being paid per week. If Man City are paying £3.7 million per week in wages and Arsenal are paying £3.2 million per week in wages, that's about £500,000 a week. That would get you two or three players, maybe even four players. You know, £100,000 a week, you get five. That builds your squad out. Arsenal don't have the revenue and funds to match what Man City are doing. And for Liverpool, it's even worse. City are paying £3.7 million per week, roughly, in wages. Liverpool are 2.6. That's £1.1 million per week. Liverpool are less than Man City. That's easily five, six, seven players. So why are we not discussing this at the start of a Premier League season? Well, we are, Will. I don't know why you're being so quiet, because he's not here. But it's a fascinating point of the monopoly that Man City have of this Premier League. And yes, it's because of how they got there. And yes, the 115 might change it. But what if I dropped a complete mic drop here? I don't want to drop the mic because I'm talking into it. But I'm sort of stitching myself up a little bit here, because Manchester United pay roughly the same as Manchester City in wages, about £3.7 million a week and about £200 million a year in wages. And they failed. But they're the only club that's got anywhere near it. And Man United have failed. But even Manchester United aren't following that model anymore, because in the last few weeks, Varane and Martial have gone, which is over £500,000 per week off that. So they're coming down to Arsenal levels anyway, leaving Man City clear and above everybody else in what they pay per week in wages. And that is why it is almost mission impossible for an Arsenal to compete with Manchester City across a nine-month season, when Man City are paying tens of millions of pounds a year more in wages and hundreds of thousands of pounds a week more in wages. We're talking money, we're talking finance here, but we're talking football. It's Goldbridge Saves Football. But we are talking football, because to win the Premier League, everybody knows you've got to beat Man City. So you've got to look at why Man City win the Premier League. And they win the Premier League because they have the best squad. Not the best 11, they have that as well, but they've got the best squad. Their bench is full of players on hundreds of thousands of pounds a week being rotated out of the team to keep them fresh and fit. It's a genius thing what Pep does, but it's easy to be a genius when you've got all the tools. Not necessarily. At the end of the day, you could give me the best crayons in the world and I'd still not be able to draw a decent picture. I'm crap. But Pep is obviously an artist, and you give him the best tools and he produces a masterpiece. He produces domination. But we have to have an honest conversation about why Man City have won six out of seven. And yes, they've got a good manager, but he's also got far better tools than everybody else. Arteta might well be, you know, a massive admirer of Pep, and he might be able to think he can go toe-to-toe with Pep, but he can't go toe-to-toe with Pep and Man City when his wage bill is £600,000-£700,000 a week less than what Man City has? Because that would be another three or four internationals on your squad. And if you give Arsenal another three or four internationals, which, let's be clear, would be people like João Neves, who's going to PSG, would be people like an Ollie Watkins, who could play up front, would be people like, a Vardial, who could play left back, you know, three or four proper good players that would be playing and fighting for a place, Arsenal win the league. If you give them the finances and players that Man City have got, then Arsenal could realistically look at winning the league because Arteta could rotate players out and keep them fresh. But that's why Man City finished the season so hard and so well. One, because they've done it so many times, but two, because Pep across the season has got so many options that he can rotate them out. So at the start of this season, let's call it for what it is. There is a financial advantage to Man City that goes beyond 115. It's also about the players they've got. And look, let me just add in here. If Man City are paying £3.7 million per week in wages and the squad that affords them, Arsenal down at around £3 million per week, Liverpool around £2.6 million a week. How does anybody else live with that? So I think that until and if we ever get Man City dealt with, it might open up a very competitive Premier League. But I would pose the question, is it even possible for another football club in the Premier League to have a squad like Man City when you look at how much Man City pay for it? Clubs can't afford it. Financial fair play, PSR, whatever you want to call it, those squads are a holy grail to everybody else because they don't have the revenue and they don't have the funds to do it. It's mission impossible. And can you win a Premier League against Man City when they've got the squad that they've got and the quality they've got in that squad? It's an interesting point. Which brings me on to the next bit I wanted to talk about, actually. Let's talk about the transfer window. It's been a little bit quiet for a lot of clubs. I mean, look, even Manchester United have had a very busy transfer window. But when you think about it, Varane and Kambwala have left. Yoro's come in. He's now injured. Man United's defence is actually worse than it was at the end of last season. And when you look at the midfield, Amrabat's left and no one's come in. So although Man United have been very active in stories and talks and personal terms, what we've actually got to show for it, I would say we're not much different than last season. You could argue at this point, we might be a bit worse. However, we are very close to a number of deals like Ugarte and De Ligt. So United are active. Liverpool with Arne Slot, nothing coming in yet. We've heard of offers coming in for people like Endo and Trent's been linked to Real Madrid. I think fundamentally for Liverpool, to start off with them, are you concerned? Look, you don't even need to be a Liverpool fan. We all love football. That's the whole point of Goldbridge Saves Football. I look at that Liverpool team and I think, what do they need from a transfer perspective? And I'll say what I said about Klopp. I thought that they had an outside chance of winning the league at one point last season. I thought they would win the Europa League and they ended up with just the Carabao Cup and Jurgen Klopp's gone. But I think he was in a race against time, building a team in his final season to try and win. And I felt if Klopp had stayed another year, that team would have been even stronger this year. So there is a good argument to say that Arne Slot is inheriting a team that's, you know, you think about Sir Alex Ferguson when he left, it never should have fallen as hard as it did under David Moyes. But there was a, you know, a very fair assessment to say that that team was coming towards the end of its cycle, you know, the ages of some of those players. Whereas with that Liverpool team, I don't think it's reached its peak yet. I think this season could be really good. The question mark will be, with Jurgen Klopp gone, how good will Arne Slot be? And the positive news coming out of Liverpool is that they're very impressed with him at the moment. But transfers-wise, what do they need to do? And I think, you know, when Erik ten Hag took over at Manchester United and when Mikel Arteta took over at Arsenal, and even when Pep Guardiola took over at Man City, you knew there was going to be a lot of incomings and outgoings as those squads needed a lot of work. Normally, when a new manager comes in, you do get that. But I think Liverpool fans might be getting a little bit impatient. But looking at it from the outside in, yes, I would expect a new manager to be backed in the market. It's stereotypical. That's what happens. But I would also say that he is inheriting a really good squad with some good young players coming through, a number of people who've been bought in the last few years, and a team that wasn't that far off. So when you're bringing in a new manager with the style of football that Arne Slot's got, there aren't any necessarily obviously glaring holes in that team. And there is a lot to be said for, he's got a lot of options. Let's have a pre-season and see what we've got first. That's never going to excite certain football fans who want signings and sales. But I think that I can understand why Liverpool are waiting till the end of, you know, waiting till August to do business, because I think prices will be more realistic. But it also will have given Arne Slot a good month to look at these players and assess what he's got. So I think Liverpool will be active. Where would I look? I still think with Liverpool, the way Slot is going to be very fundamentally focused around that double pivot in the midfield, he might look at something there. And it'll be interesting to see what he does with the strikers, because I think he's going to be more focused on false nines and utilising his wingers to get him behind. So where Darwin Nunez fits in, does he even need another striker? Centre-backs, they're well stacked. Full-back, I think that's important. He might look at a left-back to fight with Robertson. Is Tsimikas up to it? But I think Liverpool are very much a work in progress as to what Slot wants to do after he's spent some time with them. On back to Arsenal, I think that, I mean, look, we've just spoken about it there. With Arsenal, it's squad depth. It's Calafiori's a good signing. I still think that if you had the revenue and, you know, capability that Man City have got, you would try and replicate that. You would bring in a midfielder that Declan Rice could get rotated out for. You know, if Declan Rice gets injured, or Saliba gets injured, or Saka or Odegaard get injured, I think Arsenal suffer. So I think when you look at Man City, De Bruyne misses half the season, they can cope. If Ruben Diaz misses half the season, they can cope. I think those are the positions that Arsenal should be looking at, but I don't really think they've got the financial capability to do it. And let's be clear, I think if Mikel Arteta could bring in Alexander Isak or Ollie Watkins, he would do it, and that would make Arsenal better. So I think what Arsenal need to be better is what they can't have. It's not go and spend 30 million on a Sporting Lisbon midfielder. They actually need what Man City have got. And financially, I don't think anybody can have that. So I think Arsenal, again, will be there or thereabouts, but it will be the squad depth of quality and rotation that will probably hinder them against the likes of Manchester City. Spoken about Man United, spoken about Liverpool. Chelsea, I mean, look, they've had some bad pre-season games, Chelsea. Again, new manager. What are they going to be all about? They've got a raft of players that I don't think suit them. And I think Chelsea are the big uncertainty. As I said, I think they should have kept Pochettino. It would have given them more of a plan. But they've started again. They've got a lot of players, as I said. They still need an out-and-out striker. I don't believe that Jackson can be that solution. I know Nkunku's back fit again, and there was a lot of talk about him. But I think Nkunku's a little bit like Mason Mount at Man United. Meant to have a good season last year. Injured for most of it. Lots of hope this year. But the real hope from Chelsea and Man United fans is that they can actually stay fit. That's the fundamental first point. But Chelsea, I still think they need the out-and-out striker, and they might need a lot more than that, because ultimately, Chelsea are the big unknown, aren't they? I mean, we're going to look at the Fantasy Premier League stuff in a moment, and you know, you're looking at where the value is. Go to Manchester City. Man City haven't done anything in the transfer window yet. You almost expect them to just drop £100 million on Bruno Guimaraes or something like that, because they can do that. If they don't do that, are they wary of the 115 down the road, or are they still going to do what they do? They've got Erling Haaland, who is a cheat code in Fantasy Premier League and in real life, and they have got the squad to go and win the league again. It's a bit boring. It's a bit boring in the squad as well. You know, if you're a Man City fan, you're like, we don't really need anything. We're better than everybody else. Let's just win the Champions League this year. But I look at that Man City side and I don't really think they need to do anything. I don't. I think they're ready to go again, and it will be 7 out of 8 unless we get something amazing happen. And then away from that, look, the Tottenhams, the Aston Villas of this world and the Newcastles of this world, I would have expected a little bit more from Newcastle, but they seem to be the richest club in the world that's struggling with actually spending that money legitimately because of FFP. Tottenham with Daniel Levy will always be careful. And it's going to be very... Look, I think Aston Villa, Tottenham and Newcastle and Brighton are very interesting clubs to look at this season to see how they do. But in the transfer market, I would have expected a little bit more. But I think a lot of clubs collectively have been quite slow in this transfer window. And there's a bigger question there that I think we'll probably pick up on later in the transfer window, maybe into next season. We've seen the dilution of football quality in the Premier League over the last 12 months from the Premier League for a multitude of reasons. VAR has been horrific. Adding time on is just stupid. And we've seen a massive increase in injuries. And therefore, we're seeing a dilution in the quality of the football we watch every week. We might not be aware of it, but we are, because those three things impact. VAR, added time, injuries, obviously leads to fatigue, absence, and mistakes. And that dilutes the quality of the football we're watching. But I think on a different level now, the football isn't there in the summer. And the void is normally filled with exciting transfers. And I look back over the last 30 years, and there's always been exciting transfer windows. Spurs, Villa, Chelsea, Newcastle. You know, we always have excitement in the transfer window. And this year we haven't had it. And I think that this is really because the Premier League have dropped the ball again. I think financial fair play is a responsible thing that we need, but it looks like it's got too sharp a teeth at the moment. It's hitting clubs to a point where they don't want to do business. And that's bad for the Premier League brand. That's bad for the excitement. I mean, I remember the day when Man United would play Liverpool on Super Sunday and it'd been built up all week. We don't get that anymore. We don't get that event build up anymore. And that's sad. We're diluting the quality of the Premier League. It's still going to sell. It's still going to make people money. But you know, things should be getting better, not worse. And to lose a transfer window because of, you know, some geeks in a room deciding that this is what you can pay and this is what you can't pay. Bottom line is, we don't want somebody to be bought by a nation or a billionaire and just pay stupid money for players and stupid wages. That rule can be put in place without restricting clubs from actually buying players. And I think it's a real shame. I think the summer transfer window is a massive part of football. It's a massive part of excitement for football fans. And it's been an absolute shower of shit this summer. And somebody's to blame for it. And, you know, if we've got some weird conspiracy stuff going on about how, you know, it's just a coincidence that no one wants to spend money, then fine. But I think it's bollocks. I think people aren't spending money because they're scared about points deductions and stuff like that. And the Premier League needs to take a long, hard look at itself, because we can relax these rules without getting stupid. Like, let everybody spend another £100 million a year. Like, do something about it, because we can't have another summer like this. There's no Euros next summer. So you're going to absolutely make people switch off from football completely between the end of May and the start of August if we have a summer transfer window like this next year. It's not good enough, and more needs to be said about that. I want to talk about Fantasy Premier League, but I also just want to touch on something else as well. Talking about football, which is what we're here to talk about, talking about the globalization of football, which is a fantastic thing. There'll be people listening to this podcast in Swindon, probably in Durham, Cornwall, but probably also as far away as Edinburgh or Dublin. But no, I'm joking. There'll be people listening in Delhi. There'll be people listening in Tokyo. There'll be people listening in Auckland, which is in New Zealand, maybe in New Mexico, maybe in Rio de Janeiro, maybe in Toronto, maybe in Alabama. So, sweet home Alabama. So, this is a global sport and we embrace that. I did a video on That's Football, which is sort of the sister of, or brother, or whatever else people call themselves these days. But we're in a relationship with That's Football, the YouTube channel. It's not a sexual one. It's a friendship. It's a family. And none of that sort of stuff goes on in that. If it does, report it and get it sorted. Don't know where I'm going there. This is why I need Will for a bit of grounding. But my point is that football is a global sport and you cannot barrier that off and you shouldn't do that. I cannot stand the arrogance and elitism that some have in football, where it's my club because I was born in this country, or it's my club because I'm from the city where the football club is. We're all very transient now. The world is diverse, and that's a very, very good thing. And you will get Arsenal fans in Iceland. I'm not talking about the pizza aisle. I'm talking about the country. You will get Liverpool fans in Saudi Arabia, and you will get Chelsea fans who live in Swindon. This is the world we live in now, and it's a great world of football, and it's an exciting world. And whilst there is a lot wrong with football, as I say, we've spoken about some of the issues with the Premier League, and it's almost like complacency is seeping in as the arrogance just allows the game to dilute. But One of the things those people want is the Premier League to play games abroad. Yes, it's a touchy subject. Yes, get your comments in. What are your thoughts on this? Because the NFL has done it remarkably well. We get every autumn a couple of NFL games played at the Spurs ground, and they are competitive NFL games. NFL is American football, by the way. I should have clarified that. So competitive games in American football get played in England and in Germany, and they're looking to take it to other countries as they look to grow the appeal of American football. I'm a fan of American football, and it works well. This is coming to football. This summer, Manchester United are in LA. A lot of clubs are in America, whether it's Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man City, Chelsea, Liverpool, they're all out there because it's a huge money-making exercise, but it's also a huge audience and everybody wants a piece. Absolutely, we've heard it from the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, Liverpool fan, basically hinting that he'd like to see his club playing competitive games in America. We've had the chairman of Liverpool saying that he'd love to see that happen. More and more, the Premier League have mentioned it, that we've had the 39th game. But I think that this is probably going to happen and it's going to get pushed through at some point. Now, I did a video about this the other day, but this is a podcast. It's a different audience and I want to get your comments on this. Basically, what I said is I can see it happening. I'm not normally somebody who's open to change when it comes to my professional life. In other areas, let's try it. But in football, I would be somebody that would be like, well, I am a traditionalist. There is history. I don't want Manchester United to move away from Old Trafford to a new stadium, not because the new stadium wouldn't be impressive, but because Old Trafford is a church. It's a religion to us United fans, and it is so entwined with our history and the Busby Babes that, to be honest, to move away from it would just be very, very sad. And look, I remember football in the 80s before the Premier League. I remember teletext. To take Manchester United away from Old Trafford for a Premier League game and play it in New York would be the end of something and the start of something else. If you can take Manchester United against Fulham to New York, that's just the first step. They can say, oh, don't worry, we won't do it with the big games. We'd never do it with Man United Liverpool. But eventually you could probably see Man United playing Liverpool in LA in a Premier League game for 3 points up for grabs. Is that too far? Can we stop it? Should it be stopped? Bottom line, I think fans would need to be consulted on this because it's not just the match-going fans or the traditionalist fans that would be against it. I think you might find there'd be fans around the world that might get to see those games that would actually go, I don't want to see them sort of games. I want them to be played at Old Trafford because that's what they know. Not to mention, it's one thing taking Arsenal playing Crystal Palace away from the Emirates and playing it in Saudi Arabia. It's another thing doing it at a different time zone and people having to get up at silly o'clock to watch their team play. I think it opens up a lot and maybe it will never happen. But in football, what was I just mentioning about added minutes, VAR, all these injuries because of all these games, all that comes down to money. And where there's money to be made, the Premier League will look at options. I think the big thing is that if the Premier League don't do it, other leagues will. And then we might be late to the party and be forced to do it anyway. I don't think there's an easy answer to this. I think it is something that's going to keep being pushed. And it's whether football fans have enough of a voice or say to stop it. And we'll have to just wait and see what happens with that. But what I would say is that there should be no discussion about any Premier League game being played outside of the UK before we modernise what goes on in the UK. And if you live in Sweden or India or New Zealand or Australia or wherever, you can get a Premier League pass and watch every single Premier League game. If we live in the UK, which some of us do, we can only watch what TNT or Sky or Amazon have the rights to put on. If it's a 3 o'clock game between Arsenal and Bournemouth, we can't watch it. Legitimately, we can't watch it. So before the Premier League starts thinking about taking games outside of the UK, they need to modernise the UK and allow this 3 p.m. blackout to be got rid of, because we're going into yet another season where this just gets kicked under the carpet. There's a new government in town. Conservatives have gone. Labour are in. If they are about the people, then they need to create a TV system where football fans can watch their football club play. Because again, I repeat, I find it absolutely disgusting, archaic, and basically draconian dictatorship state that a Liverpool fan in Switzerland can watch every single Liverpool game by paying for it legitimately. But a Liverpool fan in Liverpool, if they haven't got a ticket to a stadium that's a sellout for Liverpool against Everton, which would never be a 3 o'clock game, so I'll do for Liverpool against Nottingham Forest at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, which is a sellout, but you're a Liverpool fan, you can't watch that game. You can't pay to watch that game legally. You are breaking the law if you find a way to watch it. It is disgustingly thick in the year 2024. So we can have the conversation and do about whether games will ever be played outside of England. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. I certainly think it will get pushed. But can we please have the conversation about why it is that fans in the UK cannot watch their team play every single game in the Premier League, but fans outside can? And they'll come back to this nonsense about that Liverpool fan might go and watch Tranmere Rovers. He bloody well won't. If Liverpool are playing a game of football at 3 o'clock and they can't watch it and they can't get a ticket, they're not going to go, oh, well, I'm not that bothered. I'm off down the road to watch Tranmere. They're going to find a way to watch or listen, aren't they? And that is fundamentally the bottom line here. And also, as I've said before, if they started selling Premier League passes in the UK, the extra revenue that was there could be fed down a percentage of it to some of those other clubs anyway. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. Anyway, get your comments in on that. This is exciting, right? I'm just going to get straight into it. We are getting very, very close now. The Premier League actually is only 2.5 weeks away. Man United Fulham is the first Premier League game. It starts 2 weeks on Friday. The Community Shield between Man United and Man City is a week on Saturday. It's fast approaching. It really is, which means that we're going to start talking about Premier League predictions soon. Now, I will be doing my video on That's Football. I just need to factor in an afternoon where I can be drunk again and do it, because it was famously my video last year where I predicted that Man United would win the Champions League. But I did predict Man City would win the league, which I think, you know, even your dead dog could do that. If you've got a dog that's dead, if you have, it would probably predict Man City. Rest in peace. But, and, you know, maybe we'll be saying rest in peace to Man City in a year's time. I don't know. But look, what I'm building up towards in a weird way is the That's Football Premier League, Fantasy Premier League league that you can join. You might not have loaded it up yet. I only loaded it up this morning, but we are going to do a Fantasy Premier League, and we are going to make sure, because this is the second year of the podcast, and last year we were very good, but we learned some things along the way. We mentioned last week that we want to get more involved in the EFL and some European leagues as well, and give a broader football appeal, because we're here to save football and we want to do that. But the Fantasy Premier League element is very important to us as well. So our league code, if you want to join, I can't wait to check how many of you join. Goldbridge Bulls in there, number one. 3QB5BB. In the phonetic, or I call police alphabet, 3QB5BB. That is the code to join the That's Football Premier League. So get involved in that. I mean, I don't need to talk you through all this, do I? What the Fantasy Premier League situation is. You basically pick a squad, you pick your 11, and they score points for you based upon how they perform. Now, apparently, there are some changes this year in relation to how some of the points will be allocated, which I'm all for. But fundamentally, you want strikers to score goals, you want midfielders to get assists, and you want defenders to get clean sheets. Same, and goalkeepers as well. I still stand by what I've always said. I do think just having a quick look at where some of the value might be in the Premier League this season. I mean, look, going through the goalkeepers, the highest scoring goalkeeper last year was Jordan Pickford. He's available for 5 million. Second place goalkeeper was Raya. He's available for 5.5. And third place was Leno, who's available for 5. So Anana was in fourth. I mean, the goalkeeping situation last year was actually quite interesting, and there's not really a standout goalkeeper to go for. Alisson had a bit of a weird season last year, but he's still 5.5, which is more than Pickford. So, you know, have a look at that. See what you think around the goalkeepers. Defenders-wise, Ben White was number one last year. I mean, Trent's normally the guy to go for, but he didn't necessarily have the season he would have hoped to. But under Arne Slot, I still think at 7 million, he is the most expensive defender you can go for, and probably underperformed last year. So Trent's probably that guy to go for. But other notable people, Pedro Porro, obviously Saliba and Gabriel did very well. They're 6 million a pair. Jared Branthwaite at Everton did quite well, only 5 million as well there. Into the midfield, let's have a look at what's in there. So top player last year would not be a surprise to many. Cole Palmer by a long way, 244 points. Foden was second with 230 and Saka was third with 226. 10.5 million for Palmer, 9.5 million for Foden, and Saka's there for 10. So Foden's probably the value option there. £1 million cheaper than Palmer in a better side. Big shout out to English football. Bottled the final of the Euros, but had the top three in the midfield section of Fantasy Premier League. Mo Salah, 12.5 million, the most expensive midfielder you can get. Son's there at 10. Any value in there? I still think Odegaard at 8.5 is a good shout. Anthony Gordon at 7.5, very good value. Same price as Jared Bowen. Bruno Fernandes, 8.5. Declan Rice and Rodri in the top 10 at 6.5 million as holding midfielders is quite interesting. Luis Diaz, 7.5. Yeah, there's good options in the midfield. I think the most interesting area is the forwards, because you have to pick Erling Haaland. I mean, this has been the problem with Fantasy Premier League for years now. You have to pick Erling Haaland. If you don't, you're an idiot, basically. 15 million gone straight away because you've got to pick him. But he didn't actually get the most points in Fantasy Premier League last year. Ollie Watkins beat him, £6 million cheaper. I think those two, for me, have to be in your team. Haaland and Watkins have got to be in your team. They were so far ahead of everybody else. As I said, Watkins got 228 points. Haaland got 217 points. Third place was Havertz on 180, which is, 40 points behind those two. He's available for 8 million. Solanke was fourth, 7.5, and Isak in fifth, who's 8.5. I think the striking options are pretty dull, really. You've got to go Watkins and Haaland, and then where is the value? There's a lot of cheaper strikers like Chris Wood, Wissa, Mateta, Jackson. They're all around 7, 7.5, Kuna, 6.5. Yeah. The striking area is a bit different. But look, I'm being a bit biased here, but I do think there is value to be had. I think there's some good value at Newcastle. I think there's some good value at Brighton and Spurs. But looking at my club, Manchester United, had such a bad season last year, might have a bad season this year, but if they had a good season this year, they've been priced very realistically. Onana in goal is 5 million. He will play every game. Deleu at right back, 5 million. In fact, the most expensive defender for Man United is 5 million, and that's Luke Shaw, Deleu, and Harry Maguire. Lenny Yoro's at 4.5, and he will start more games than Maguire, but he is injured at the moment. Midfield, Bruno's our most expensive one at 8.5. Again, that's value for a team that could get goals. I'm just having a look. Ahmad, 5 million, could start games. Rashford, 7 million, could have a good season. So there is value there. Just having a look at where Garnacho is. Garnacho, 6.5. So there's good value at Man United. And then in the striking positions, you could get Rasmus Højlund for 7 million as well. So like I say, join the league, start picking your team, start playing around with it. I think there's going to be a lot of transfer activity in August as well. But we are going to give some prizes away exclusively through the podcast. We will be promoting it on That's Football, on my Premier League predictions, but the prizes will only be given out to people in the podcast. So we're going to be doing some games and stuff in the comments section there. The code is 3QB5BB. Now, people who are intelligent will say, how will you know if the entrant is from That's Football YouTube channel or from the podcast? Very, very easily, because we'll only give the prize out on the podcast. So we will say, you've won a prize on the podcast, get in contact, whereas we won't say it on a YouTube video. So you need to be listening to the podcast, basically. That's the point of it. Right, I've done 40 minutes. I feel like I've done 2 hours. This just shows how hard it is to do a podcast on your own. But I think I've done a good job. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Some really good conversation points there where I wish I had somebody to talk back to, but they are currently touring the East Coast of LA. Will, trying to do his bit for the Birmingham City Supporters Club. He's on tour, trying to recruit people for their League One campaign. But I think he's back next week. He probably isn't. I know he's back for the start of the Premier League season. But if he's not back for next week, let me know what topics you might like. I mean, I'll come up with stuff anyway. But don't forget, the podcast goes nowhere. Goldbridge Saves Football. We're here to discuss the big things in football. And I think the favourite thing I discussed today was actually stuff that journalists should be doing. I mean, it's one of my pet hates, which is why I've left it at the end of the video, because I know at the end of the podcast, I just despise modern media in the sense of journalism. It's so lazy. If they don't have access to a press conference where they get to ask a question and feed off the answer of the manager or the player, they've got no individual journalism at all. It's a dying thing. And I implore people out there to go and do your own journalism, because it is really interesting. And yes, we're here to talk about the topical things, but I think over the last year, we're heading towards 100 podcasts, by the way. You're a fantastic community, the Ultras. Keep sharing it, telling people about it, because it's an organic growth. But we want to get into, and we want to give people something different across the week where they can think. I mean, this is what the United Stand and That's Football was always built upon. Conversation on opinion that doesn't have to be in agreement, but generates thought. And when I was thinking about this show today, I was like, well, we're going to go into Premier League predictions in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about who's going to win the league. But it's not just the 115 for Man City. If they're spending £500,000-£700,000 a week more than Arsenal on wages, we know the average decent Premier League player is on about £150,000 a week. So if Arsenal are spending less, £500,000-£600,000 a week less, that's 3, 4, 5 players. Good players as well. £150,000 a week is a good player. Like, it's, you know, a very good player. So Arsenal are fighting Man City 4, 5, 6 good players down, because Man City are paying that amount of money on wages to build that squad. They're capable of doing it because of the way their books are balancing now, with revenue over 700 million and their wages, etc. They can do it. It's not about Arsenal fans going, Arsenal, we should do that. They can't do that. And if they can't do that, we have a monopoly. And if we've got a monopoly, we have 6 out of 7, 7 out of 8, 8 out of 9. If you've ever played the Monopoly game, basically what is happening in a Premier League season is everyone rolls the dice at the start. Oh, let's go past Old Kent Road, Pall Mall, you know, Trafalgar Square. Oh, this is great. We're doing really well. Then on the home straight, you've got Park Lane, you've got Mayfair, you've got Regent Street, and Man City have got a bloody hotel on every one of them, and they're making you pay in the home straight. And that's what's happening with the Premier League at the moment. It looks good for the first 3 quarters of the race, and then on the home straight, Man City's wealth really kicks you in the arse and bankrupts you. And that's what's happening in the Premier League at the moment. Get your comments in. Keep spreading the word. Give us a 5-star review. You're very welcome. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.